Welcome to the Global from Asia podcast, where the daunting process of running an international business from Hong Kong is broken down into straight up actionable advice. And now, your host, Michael Michelini.
Welcome to Global from Asia, episode 134. I am recording this intro after an amazing cross-border trip. It was the first of its kind this past Friday, with a bit over 20 amazing business people that are based in Hong Kong, Shenzhen, Guangzhou, Zhuhai, and probably a few places I didn't even catch. So it was really amazing people like Chris Davey and Benjamin May that attended. And it was a full day touring Shanghai Free Trade Zone in the Shenzhen city. We had seminars and seeing companies and, of course, some amazing networking and connections between Chinese business people and global business people, which is stuff I love to do. And it was a lot of fun and got great feedback. So we plan to do more of these on a regular basis. And we're going to use globalfromasia.com/cross-border-trips as the page to kind of link and let you know about all those different choices. There's a few I'm already working on as we speak. So now let's go into this week's show. We are continuing our excursion outside of Hong Kong and China, and this time we're going to Thailand. Let's listen in to Carson. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in to another Global from Asia podcast. We are venturing around Asia a little bit in Southeast Asia, and we have a friend of mine, a fellow DCer, Karsten. Thanks for being here.
Hey, Michael.
So yeah, we met at the Bangkok DCBKK last year, and you've also been just sharing a lot. So you have a great resources on your blog and about Thai companies. So I just think it'd be great to get you on the show. So thanks for coming, Karsten.
Sure. I'm happy to be here.
Great. So you're in Thailand now as we do this, right? So can you maybe share with us a bit of your kind of like history and how you ended up doing business there?
Sure. So I actually moved to Thailand more than 10 years ago. That was in January 2006. Before that, I started a company with a business partner of mine in Germany, right out of university. Well, technically not quite right out of university, because in order to get some government scholarship for entrepreneurs, we had to be unemployed first. So the first thing we did when we quit university is apply for unemployment benefits. And then 6 weeks later, we actually started the company. So we did that in Germany. I've always been a huge gamer. So since high school, I've been playing basically 6 hours a day. And so that's where the first company got started, in gaming. And we started out in Germany, but it was always in English language. So all of our customers were in the US, UK, Australia, Canada. And we noticed that maybe Germany isn't the best location for that. So the options were either get closer to the customers or move somewhere where it's cheaper to produce. And my business partner at the time had done an internship in Thailand. So that's why we looked into that. And we called up the Thai embassy and literally asked them, so how do you start a business in Thailand?
Cool.
And their first reaction was exactly that. They were laughing at us and like, oh, right. Yeah, like we need another foreigner with a beach bar here. but they put us in touch with the Board of Investment, which is the Thai government institution for, building up foreign investment in the country. And they happened to have an office in Frankfurt in Germany, where we were located at the time. So we met up with them and talked about it. And turns out that it's actually quite a feasible option. We had looked at other countries as well, but for us at the time, I think it was very important to have a place that's good for business, but also offers quality of life. So I remember one of the alternatives was Turkey, because I'm not sure if they still have it, but they had a number of free trade zones in Turkey. I think it was 19, where there is zero tax on anything, like no profit tax, no employee tax. No one pays any tax whatsoever. The downside being, of course, that it's in the middle of the desert. And we weren't quite up for that. And, you know, if you compare the desert with Bangkok, you can see that there's a little bit of a difference in terms of quality of life. So Bangkok won out over the Turkish desert. And that's how we decided basically to move here within 2 years of starting our company in Germany.
Really cool. I could imagine that phone call. So yeah, I have really actually no experience with business in Thailand. I've been there for, of course, the conference, a couple conferences, and some other kind of personal trips or friends trips and company setups. So you have a great blog post and a lot of resources we can link to on the show notes. You can definitely mention as we go through the show. So it's basically, like you said, you chose it because of the location, or would people do this like remotely, or is this something if they're going to be like planning a long-term Thailand, you know, business?
I think it wouldn't make sense to incorporate in Thailand if you're just here for a very short period of time. The reason why we picked it was that it's really the whole concept, the whole package is a good deal. As in, you have other locations where it's very easy to incorporate or where taxes are super low, but rent are astronomical. Or you have other places where it's really easy to find qualified staff, but the costs are very high. And I think Thailand is a very, and especially Bangkok, is a very balanced approach to that. Meaning you have the basic infrastructure in place, as in, you know, internet, the labor market, rent is very affordable. It's easy to get around. So it's like you don't need a security detail. You don't have to worry about getting robbed. So like the whole package as a founder, speaking as a founder, not only as a company owner, I think the whole package is what makes Bangkok stand out. You can be basically in one jurisdiction. Your company can be in one jurisdiction. Your operations are in the same jurisdictions. Your life is in that jurisdiction. And you have not the complexity that you have with like multinational setups. So you can be really in one place, and that makes your life in a lot of ways a lot easier and more comfortable.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I think you probably talked to a lot of entrepreneurs too that they don't even have a product yet, and they're talking about their offshore taxes, and you know, they're trying to like have a corporation here and another one that's there and bank account there. And I think you seem like having a similar advice, right? I think it's, especially at the beginning stages, is to try to be as simple as possible and just focus on the business rather than your corporate structure, right?
Oh, totally. Yeah. If you are, especially if you're starting out, I usually, you know, people sometimes ask me what it's like to start a company in Thailand. And I answer them, if you want to have an office and staff in Thailand and there's a reason for you to do so, it's a great idea. But for most people just starting out, and just whether it's a freelance thing or they're just a one-man show, it's often best to go with wherever they're from, because that's, you know, where they have their connections, where they have know-how, where they can ask for recommendations. And while now there's a lot of information online about, you know, which accountants to use, which lawyers to use, it's still a lot easier to just find that in your home country. And if you look at the structure for like a small company, it's often even cheaper. I mean, I remember we pay more for accounting in Bangkok than we did back in Germany.
Yeah, yes. It's definitely complex. I mean, I guess I feel like I have friends that own property in Thailand, you know, like beach resorts and stuff. And they do sometimes complain about, sometimes it's Thai language, right? I mean, contracts, is there English in anything, or is it all, I mean, how would that work?
I remember the very first time we had to sign a contract here. And we had just rented an office. They gave us the office contract, which was all in Thai, in hard copy. So no Google Translate. And we looked at the thing and asked him, well, do you have an English version of that? And like, well, we have one, but it's not, you know, well translated. It's like literally what they had pulled off Google Translate or so. So it didn't make much sense. And of course, if it goes to court, the version that is deciding is the Thai version. And I remember talking to a friend at the time who advised me, well, if they're going to screw you, it's not going to be in the contract. So whatever you sign, it's probably, you won't be able to enforce it anyway if it's to your advantage. And so we literally just signed the Thai contract, put a remark to it as agreed on in the English version, and that was that. And it turned out that our landlord was a really nice guy. And he helped us out with some stuff later on. But I feel like it was really a bit of a leap of faith there to say, okay, well, any, sure, we can try to have this reviewed by a lawyer, but at that rate, we're not going to get anywhere. We just have to, you know, take a bit of a risk here and just sign off on it. And it turned out to be the right decision in that case. In general, language-wise, I think in Bangkok, you can get by with English. So you can sign all your contracts in English. You can, whatever you get in Thai, you can probably prop through Google Translate and you'll end up with a rough understanding of what you're signing. So in general, you can make do with English here. It's not that you have to learn Thai or speak Thai. I do speak Thai. I read Thai. I can write Thai. So when I have a power of attorney that I'm signing, which of course have to be in Thai, I know what I'm signing. But in most cases, though, it's more for social thing that you can have a better social life if you speak the language rather than you need it for business.
Got it. Yeah, I mean, I think that's just part of international business, especially for small, you know, entrepreneurs or SMEs, is the cultures and the languages. And, you know, I don't want to give advice about not paying attention to contracts, but a lot of times it's going to be hard to enforce as a small entrepreneur anyway if something goes against you. So yeah, I mean, I guess it's really the people and calculating the risk. But yeah, I mean, it is nerve-wracking, but I think that's what makes our lives so interesting, right? Over here in Asia. So
it does.
Cool. So you seems like when you called up the government, they were pretty helpful and they're welcoming to foreigners in Bangkok. Is it maybe for, how about immigration and, you know, work permits, investor, you know, permits, stuff like that?
So in general, there people are always complaining about immigration laws. There's few places where people are like, oh, this is amazing. Everything, you know.
Yeah, it's true.
The exception is actually Georgia, where if you walk out of the airport, they immediately give a 365-day visa on arrival to everybody, and everybody can start a company and own land. But no, so the thing is, a lot of people arrive here on a tourist visa, and some of them stay very long on a tourist visa. Getting a work permit is not easy, but also feasible. So that is one challenge a lot of foreigners find when they come here, because a work permit means that a company who hires a foreigner has to have a minimum number of ties per foreigner, as well as a minimum amount of investment per foreigner they hire. And usually they have to show a profit. And fulfilling those requirements can be a bit difficult for a small company. If you have a hotel or an airline or so, it's usually not an issue. So, or if you're a funded tech company, you have usually some special permission. So work permits for your own company are, how it works is they will ask you to have 4 ties on payroll for every foreigner you want to hire. And they'll ask for a minimum investment of $60,000 for every foreigner you want to hire.
Okay.
For cool. An investor permit, so they had an investment visa until around 2006, which they got rid of, and they recently introduced a new one, I think. Right now, the regulation says you need to have, it's actually mostly targeted at people at more like private investments rather than professional investments. So in other words, it's meant for things like purchasing a condominium or holding a fixed deposit account here. And the amount is 10 million baht, which I believe at current exchange rate is something like $250,000 to $300,000. So if you have an apartment or a house or significant cash investments here, that will get you a 1-year visa that can be renewed. It's so that's one option for. There's also retirement visas and marriage visas and other options. But in general, my impression is it's not easy, but feasible to get a work permit. And migration, getting a residence permit is very hard. But being able to just stay in the country on whatever visa you choose to do so is very feasible for most people.
Cool. Yeah, I've talked to some people and a lot of people are just flying around Southeast Asia, just, you know, hopping around for 30 days or 90 days, you know, entries and stuff like that, which is, I mean, in China too, they have people flying in and out of China for, you know, 30 day or 90 day stays or 180 day stays. So I think maybe people can do that for the short term. So let's say, digital nomad flies out to Thailand from, you know, the Western world or somewhere and starts doing their online business. What's, you know, what kind of level should they be on, or how much do you think they should invest if they're really serious about Thailand and in the long term? I mean, what's, of course, the price and the costs are not always fixed, but what kind of like costs or what investment should somebody budget for this?
So it depends a little on the type of business, the type of industry, and what people actually want to do. So the Thai government has some promotion categories. I think for the most relevant ones for digital nomads would be software and e-commerce, in both of which have the advantage that people can own those companies 100%, which is usually not possible. And you have to, you know, have a local shareholder. A lot of people do that with local lawyers, and there's all kinds of setup there. But by the book, it means that usually you're not allowed to own the majority in a Thai company. The exception being if you have an investment promotion, which is issued, for example, e-commerce and software companies. I usually tell people it makes sense to incorporate in Thailand if you want to hire people here. If you're not doing business in Thailand or with the Thai market, but for foreign markets, then you have to look at, is Thailand competitive for whatever you're trying to do? And many people find that Thailand is competitive for things like graphic design. So there's a lot of Photoshop and Photoshop-related services here. I haven't heard of many people doing sound and video things here, but based on what I know about the local labor market and, of course, the absence or limitation of some educational barriers there, I think it's also an option. Of course, English language skills are a challenge here. So things like anything having to do with English language communication, be it writing, be it speaking, people often opt to go to the Philippines instead. But Thailand also has very talented project managers, I would call them. So in other words, if you have a core team in Thailand that then outsources work to elsewhere in the world, be it where they have the technical expertise, the language expertise, or just a lower cost structure, that can actually work out very well. So you can have Thailand as a form of regional operating headquarters. And as you can probably tell from the description, that makes sense at a certain scale. So I'd say if you can see yourself working with, you know, say four people, and if you have the impression that you can find those four people in Thailand at a competitive rate and with the right skills, I think it can make sense. Of course, if you're bound to Thailand because you have a family here, so you might choose to work under more difficult circumstances. In general, though, it's not the place where it's easy to just start out as a one-man show and then slowly expand, because there is this big step going from kind of being here on a tourist visa and a laptop to going to being a legitimate company with staff, payroll, and your own work permit. So there's a bit of a steep step at that point. But once you think you can have, like maybe if you have a few freelancers already and you think, okay, I want to put that together in one office or one organization, I think that could be a good point to consider Thailand as a location.
Okay, very, very good info. And yeah, I think Thai designers are great. I mean, they're very creative people, and I've had a lot of good experiences with designers and mobile apps, and there's great co-working spaces growing there, and I think there's a lot of talent in Thailand for sure. And then banking, you know, it's always a headache with our show, and you know, it seems like everywhere is getting more and more difficult. How is banking been happening in Thailand generally for like business and operations?
It varies. So my experience has as well been since I've started my first company in 2004, that banks are always the hardest to deal with. Governments, they don't really care. It's the banks that, you know, get held responsible. Yeah. So they're ones that care. Now, this said, in Thailand, you can open a bank account on a tourist visa. Awesome. So you can walk this, you have to pick the right bank and even the right branch, but it's officially possible to open a bank account on a tourist visa. You could even open a Thai PayPal account and link it with that bank account. So while things might be limited as a private individual, it's all very feasible. Now, for business banking, I think Thailand's banks don't always make that easy. So when we started out, we struggled finding a bank that allowed us to cash US dollar checks. Some of them said you have to be a bank customer for at least 6 months before we will allow you to cash a US dollar check, which posed a bit of a problem since we couldn't get paid by clients. We eventually found a bank who then didn't require that. And other issue is, of course, payment processing. So there is Stripe in Thailand. But there are local alternatives like OMIs, I think they're called. And but you will pay more if you're Thailand-based for payment processing. So the rates will be higher than, say, if you're located in the US or Germany. So I remember when we first moved here, we used to be with WorldPay, actually. And I think they hiked their...
They've been around for a while.
I think in Germany back then, they were we were paying them something 3%-ish. And when we incorporated in Thailand, they said they're going to charge us 7%. So, I mean, it really depends on what you're doing. Like if you get paid by wire transfer from a company abroad, Thailand is great banking. The exchange rates charged by banks, like especially banks like Bangkok Bank, have a very low spread. So you actually lose very little in the exchange rate. Of course, other payment methods, there is an issue, like PayPal will charge you 2.5% converting into local currency. So payment processing will be more expensive in Thailand compared to most Western countries.
Yeah, I think that's true for all of Asia, and we're a higher risk area. I guess there's a lot of scammers maybe. So, and back, you know, a currency you mentioned, is there multi-currency options or is it all in local baht?
You can certainly have a foreign currency account. I actually wrote a very in-depth guide to the whole banking thing. Maybe we can put a link to that in the show notes.
Yeah, sure. Yeah,
we will
send it.
And I think the point there is you can do foreign currency accounts, but the problem with that is they'll charge you fees to deposit money and to withdraw money, where in the end, unless you are withdrawing and depositing money in foreign currency via transfer from abroad, you'll still end up with more fees. So while you can certainly hold money in a foreign currency here, just from a free fee point of view, there is very little benefit to do so. It's more of a hedging kind of thing where you need to pay someone in a certain currency and you want to hold that currency to avoid exchange rate risks.
Okay. Wow, this is all great. Yeah. I mean, it's hard to cover this in just an intro kind of like podcast. So appreciate your attempt here. You kind of mentioned a little bit earlier, but maybe having a Thai is like your regional subsidiary, like maybe a parent company would it be, maybe we talk about Hong Kong, of course, here, or Singapore, or maybe even Germany. Would there be, I think there are benefits, but it's pretty complicated, right? I mean, is that something somebody should do at the beginning or could they restructure later? I mean, this is a tough one, right? But I don't know how you can handle this question.
Well, I've seen different setups in the market involving Hong Kong and Singapore companies. And there is, or even UK companies. And the constellations where that usually occurs, I'd say there can be divided as follows. One is startups who are seeking outside investment. So if you're looking to raise money, doing so as a Thai entity is extremely hard to impossible. So what those companies do is they have a parent company in Hong Kong or Singapore. Usually it's Singapore because that's where more angel investors and venture capitalists sit. So they create a company there that fully owns a Thai subsidiary. It's not necessarily to start out that way. You can always start out just with a Thai company. And when you then raise money, you basically write over all your shares to the Singaporean company and you sign an IP assignment contract. So there's ways of doing it. But the general concept is Singapore or Hong Kong company for outside investment because outside investors have more trust in those jurisdictions. The other setup is if you legitimately have a company in the UK that does business there, for example, an agency that sells web development services, and then you have a development company in Thailand, so where the Thai company is a subsidiary of the UK company, You will have some discussions with the revenue department about transfer pricing in that case. So transactions between related companies, how that is handled. But in general, like people do that just for ownership structure where it's basically given simply by having operations in two countries. And a third one I've seen is that try to leverage advantages of different jurisdictions, be it taxation or double taxation agreements. So those are where it gets complicated and where there's always a trade-off between how much do you trust your business partners or the people you work with versus how much complexity do you want to have in your business. So multinational setups that probably is not something that you want to bother with at a smaller scale, and at a larger scale, you probably should work with a lawyer to do that. But I know, for example, of companies where there's one person holding the shares in the Thai company and there's another person holding the shares in the Hong Kong company. So when you have dealings between them, it's a bit more simplified, but that requires a lot of trust between the people who are involved. And I'm not sure about the legality of certain structures that exist.
Yeah, similar with like mainland China and like Hong Kong is, it's complicated. And but yeah, sometimes it's for legal or, but there's also that, yeah, exactly. It's similar, like, because a lot of times these, like Hong Kong and Singapore have lower taxes and more like Western kind of just, you know, like legal structure. So, but then there's a lot of times trust if it's really a formally owned or if it's like loosely owned, the relationship between these companies. So, yeah, I mean, this is tricky stuff. So it's, of course, people should do more than listen to our podcast here to get advice. So hopefully it just gives them some ideas to get started. This is really great. Again, I guess the ongoing costs is this, like, I know in some places it's monthly filing to government, yearly or audits, stuff like this, like kind of generally what's the upkeep for this Thai company?
So you obviously need to have an office or at least an office address. So now leaving that aside, if you're talking about things like accounting, so I'd say the cheapest accountants will start from about $100 a month. And, you know, it will be $100 to a few hundred dollars for most companies that have less than $1 million in revenue. And that usually includes the accounting, the monthly value-added tax submissions, which are in a very short time frame here. It's a bit of a hassle. Plus financial statements. And then there are mandatory audits in Thailand, which are, I think, will often cost you less than $1,000 a year. So every company has to get their statements audited. And those are the main issues. So I think in terms of accounting fees, you're looking at somewhere between $2,000 to $3,000 a year for simple things. And for the more complex it gets, like if we're looking at multi-currency transactions in different markets and lots of issues with double taxation, then of course it gets more expensive. But it doesn't stand out particularly as extremely expensive or extremely cheap either way in regards to that.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I mean, nobody likes audits, but seems like a lot of places are requiring it. So is Bangkok different than other parts of Thailand, or is basically is it like countrywide system? I'm not sure if it makes sense.
Well, Bangkok is the economic, political, and maybe even cultural center of the country. So here's where all the accountants, where all the lawyers, where all the government office sit. And you can certainly be located in other provinces. I know Chiang Mai is very popular with digital nomads. The downside, of course, of being outside of Bangkok is that the labor market is much smaller and the availability of professional services is much smaller. So on the other hand, of course, the costs are much lower. So if you have an office in Chiang Mai and if you have staff in Chiang Mai, which is like a popular, smaller, more nature-like city in the north of Thailand, you're looking at about half the cost in terms of salary, rent. But your catchment area is a tenth at best. probably less than that. So you might struggle finding specialists. So it depends a bit on who you're dealing with. I think if you're all online, all digital, you can certainly make do in a lot of other areas. And many service companies do. They're located in Phuket or Chiang Mai, which have kind of the basic infrastructure and offer maybe a higher quality of life, a lower cost structure. And it might be easier to attract foreigners who do not like to work in the big city. The Thai government offers some incentives for companies incorporated in those, not in those two centers, but in other areas of the country where there is, where they're looking to develop things further. But I think actually most of those are not that relevant for small and medium-sized businesses. It's more manufacturing targeted.
Got it. All right. This has been a great show. We're kind of getting towards the end. And I think maybe just kind of, if we could kind of like maybe give an example, either your own company or companies, you know, like, you know, how they're kind of like putting this all into a, it's kind of like an example case of how it would work.
Sure. And I think actually, if I look, I mean, I get to meet a lot of people coming through Bangkok. It is a very popular place. So you kind of see different structures. And I would say people usually get to know the place on a tourist visa. So they're here, they bring their laptop, they do their thing and just see how it's like to live here.
Okay. And then they probably spend like, say, 6 months, you think, or a year?
It depends. I mean, it varies from person to person. I spent a weekend here before I decided to move.
Awesome.
So, well, you know, you're 22. You don't really have a lot of basis for comparison, so you can make decisions a bit quicker. I think actually what a lot of people do is either they start at a local Thai company in which they do not own a majority of shares, but try to get a management control over the company. So local lawyers can usually advise on that and maybe keep the IP in an offshore company as a safeguard. So that's a setup. If you are doing software development, so if you work for clients abroad, if you are in that space, it's worthwhile considering starting out as a BOI promoted company where you're allowed to own 100%. It comes with an 8-year tax holiday. And while in theory you can convert a Thai company to a BOI promoted company, it's not easy. So if you want to do that, you have to do it from the beginning. And if you do that, then they will want to see a certain amount of minimum investment and this certain scale of operation. So which will be hard to show if you're just starting out. So I think what I would recommend people to do is see if Thailand is for them. And see if the people they need, they can find here. And once they think they have the scale where they can hire a handful of people here that take over tasks that they otherwise would outsource on Upwork, then it's worth giving a shot, especially if they are in software or e-commerce. And I think that can work out very well, but it really depends on the industry and on the scale of what people are doing.
Great. Okay, Carson, so we're towards the end here, and of course I'm sure people are very grateful. How can we find you online and learn more about what you and your companies do?
Sure. So I think what would be really interesting for people listening right now is a website I recently started. It's called thailandstarterkit.com, which is a collection of in-depth guides to people living and working in Thailand. So it's anything from how to find an apartment to which health insurance to pick, to how to open bank accounts. It's kind of an expatriate guide to the pragmatic problems and issues you face here. And so that's kind of to get the non-sexy things done. I also work on a podcast, which is called Brewed in Bangkok. It can be found at brewedinbangkok.com, which features the stories of the people you meet here, because Bangkok, I think, is really a place where you meet quite some characters.
Yeah, I can imagine.
And so that's kind of the more entertaining aspect. If you want to listen into some on that, it's brewedinbangkok.com.
Awesome. Great. And have a great day. Thanks so much.
Thank you very much for having me.
All right. Booyah, that's our first episode in Thailand, talking company setup and business. So Thanks for that, Carsten. What are you guys thinking? Last week we had the Philippines. This week is Thailand. Maybe we'll do India in the future. You know, this is Asia after all. And next week, we're going to go off into an even crazier topic. I'm excited for this one. We're going to be talking about people in Holland that are losing their citizenship for being outside of the country too long. I know we have some Dutch friends listening, so they might be perking their ears up for this one. And so let's all watch out about losing ours IDs and being stuck in limbo land. Alrighty, so enjoy the rest of your week. I'll catch you next time. And as always, show notes for this one. Carsten put a pretty good resources. It's also in the show notes at globalfromasia.com/episode134. Peace.
To get more info about running an international business via Hong Kong, please visit our website at www.globalfromasia.com. That's www.globalfromasia.com. Also, be sure to subscribe to our iTunes feed. Thanks for tuning in.